Hello and welcome to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm one of your hosts this morning, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And it is Saturday, November the 9th. Scott was looking at me. He didn't think I knew that.
Uh-huh.
You didn't think I knew that, did you? It is Saturday, November the 9th, folks. 9 a.m. in the morning, or just shortly after 9 a.m. in the morning. And Scott,
mm-hmm.
It was a balmy 33 degrees on my drive in this morning.
Yes.
You know, nice, wonderful, wonderful weather that we're having. Bright, sunny, 33 degrees. A little bit of freeze overnight.
And Tuesday and Wednesday is going to look really cold.
Yeah, man. What's it looking like? I saw you just had the weather.
26 and 28.
26 and 28. I think it'll be cooler than that when you get out in the country. In the 20s, mid-20s at that.
I like it.
Yeah, winter is here. Not quite.
No, not quite.
We're still fall, right?
Yeah.
Still in the fall season. But you are tuned into the Yard Pro Show today, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. It's easy to find us during the week. You can find us at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. There you will find a link to all of our retail locations throughout the state of South Carolina. Now, there's more than just the link to the retail locations, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's information about all things that we do that we have our hands in, which are a lot of things. We could run through the list. Of course, that would probably take up two or three episodes of the show, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Or at least one full episode.
Definitely one full episode.
Yeah, we'll save that for a rainy day in the winter. Right?
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah. But we are a sod producer, first and foremost. We produce sod. Acres and acres upon sod. Several thousand acres of sod. Many varieties of sod, from Bermuda to Zoysias to St. Augustine to Centipede to Fescue. What'd I leave out?
I think that's it.
Is that it?
I think you hit it all.
Yeah, I generalized it, right?
Yeah.
All types of Bermudas. Well, yeah, technically.
Yeah, technically, yeah.
And all types of Zoysia.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of Zoysia. Chisholm Zoysia. That's a good cold hardy variety. Right?
That's right.
Developed Kansas State University and a joint development between Kansas State and Texas A&M.
Palisades. You got the name
from the Chisholm Trail.
The Chisholm Trail.
You know why?
Because it's cold there.
Because it's cold there. And Chisholm Zoysia was developed to sustain or to survive colder
cold temperatures
through the winter. So a great grass, you know, all across the state, but you know, great grass in the upstate, especially if you're pushing, if you're in the mountainous area of South Carolina, always want to grow Zoysia, and you're pushing 1,000 square, you know, elevation of 1,000 feet, or you're in western North Carolina, Asheville, Hendersonville, that area. I know we kind of reach out that far, especially with the radio show. We have a Zoysia to survive your winters much easier than trying to nurse along some of the other varieties, because Zoysia is native to Asia, most of it to Southeast Asia. That's where it's native. That's where it came from. Not real cold in Southeast Asia. More tropical environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these plants just never really had the cold tolerance. Yeah, they would be okay in the transition zone, but one out of every 5 or 6 years, you might have a little winter injury. The neat thing with this grass, it has been bred more like the old Myers. You know, Myers is extremely prevalent to this day out in the Midwest because of the cold environment, the freeze-thaw, the dry air, the cold air, the wet weather. It's more tolerant of that. And this grass was bred by introducing some of the genes of Myers into some other Zoysia stock, and voila, we have Chisholm Zoysia. So coarser texture. And we're now cutting that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're now harvesting that. Speaking of the weather and all those good things, Scott, it's that time. We had a little bit of rain last week.
We did. And a little bit Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
Not much, but we did.
Well, it rained pretty good at my house, but it's time. Oh, you're waiting. You got the drumsticks ready.
Oh, yeah, I'm ready.
Ready? Ready? Oh, there you go. Oh, it is time for your weekly South Carolina drought update. Imagine that. Those of you that tuned in a fair amount, you have certainly heard this more than once. Scott, we are 1% improved, well, really 1.5% improved as far as drought across the state of South Carolina after all the rain. Only 1.5%. But here's the interesting thing. Don't take it as a loss, in my opinion. We take this as a gain. You know why? There are levels of drought. If you've been tuning in, you listen to the show, you know this. There are levels of drought from D0, meaning abnormally dry, all the way to D4, exceptional drought. Last week, we had 3% of our state in extreme drought, and 30% of our state was in severe drought. This week, I'm happy to report only 20% of the state is in severe drought D2 and 0% in extreme drought. So extreme drought has been eliminated in Greenville County, Lawrence County, Anderson County, as well as Richland County and Orangeburg County. Those counties that were showing extreme drought for several weeks, if not for a couple of months, some of them, you are now in D2 severe drought, which is about 20% of the state. Now, 60% of the state is still in moderate drought, D1, which is a lot, especially going into winter dormancy, okay? So the big thing, the big takeaway from this, Scott, that I can say is I know we got rain last week. If we don't get rain this week, and, you know, week before last we got rain this past week, if we don't get rain this week, please make certain, although those yards are beginning to go dormant, especially after the hard freezes, that's the other big weather topic is the hard freezes coming up. You know, we had a little freeze last night in part of South Carolina. As these grasses continue to transition into the dormant period, we've got to make certain that we keep them hydrated, we keep them wet. And if this D2, you know, severe drought conditions and even abnormally dry conditions continue throughout the winter, we need to make certain we're still putting a little bit of water. Because a lot of our winter injury, and it's not just our lawns, let's think about our plants as well. Even with our plants, a lot of this winter injury is also a direct result of desiccation, meaning things just dry out, okay? The cells desiccate. Scott, also, one thing I said just a minute ago, we were talking about, hey, we, you know, I know you can hear us up in Asheville and Hendersonville in that area. I'm also proud to say and happy to say for all you folks in Anderson, especially, was it Fairplay, Townville, all the way to the Georgia state line, guess what? You can tune in now at 101.5, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it 101.5? So, hey, we've got a whole new set of listeners who can become participants. It's easy to become a participant on the Yard Pro Show. It's simple. You can give us a call toll-free at 1-800-347-1063. That's 1-800-347-1063. And as always, you can text us at 713-07. So we would love for you to give us a call or give us a text. We'd love to hear from you, especially those that are maybe in that newer broadcast area like Fairplay, Townville, down on the lake. I know you're having your cup of joe this morning. You're probably not sitting outside on the deck. Probably sitting inside on the back of the house looking at the lake or something, right? Having that cup of coffee. Give us a call.
Yeah.
We should have new listeners today, right?
It's true.
First-time listeners, right?
Cup of coffee in the morning.
Man. So, Scott, we're going to go straight to the phone lines because we have Katie in Greenville has decided to give us a call this morning. Hello, Katie, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hey, sweeties. Well, I was trying to do my last mow of the season. 24 hours, well, it was discovering the fire ant mounds, and then it was discovering that they came back, of course. What's good for a wide spectrum? I usually use Amdro for spot, but what's good for wide spectrum? Because they're everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, Scott, are you thinking what I'm thinking, wide spectrum?
Bifenthrin.
Yes, the active ingredient, Katie, is bifenthrin. You spell it just like you say it phonetically, B-I-F-E-N-T-H-R-I-N, bifenthrin. Also, the common name of that, or trade, one of the trade names of that, is Talstar, was made pretty popular back in the day. FMC company now owns Talstar. But bifenthrin has been off patent for a number of years. There are a lot of products out there that contain it. A granular form of bifenthrin to me is a good way to go. It's very inexpensive. Not very long lived. I mean, we
it's about a season.
Yeah, maybe a half a season, maybe. You know, bifenthrin's a great product. In the liquid form, there's one product out there. It is a restricted use label, but they still use the product for termite control, especially around foundations or on slab homes. They use it as a pretreatment. You can drench around the foundation of your home. So if you take the bifenthrin when you spread it, don't think just fire ants. Let's go ahead and double duty. If we spread that in your shrub bed closer up to the base of your home, it'll also help with your other, what I like to call creepy crawly insects that may be trying to come in the house.
Okay. Since I'm driving and I'm a bear of little brain, can you pop that up on your website then?
I'm trying to think. There should be some reference to that. But we really don't have a message board per se of the website. But I will tell you this, Katie. It's very simple. If you reach out to one of the stores during the week, you know, hey, what's a good broad-spectrum insecticide I can spread on the lawn? The first thing that's going to come to any one of the store managers or store employees' mind is going to be bifenthrin. It's such a good product. It's inexpensive. Really quick knockdown, and that's what you need because you treat those mounds with Amdro, which I think is a great idea. It's, you know, Clemson came out with this thing called the two-step years ago for fire ant control, and the thought process is let's blanket control the yard with something like bifenthrin that's inexpensive. Then we go back and mound treat because when you treat the mounds, the queen, she's a pretty smart lady, okay? And she gets all of her worker ants to eat things before she eats it, and she observes those worker ants. So when she sees the worker ants dying from the Amdro, guess what the queen does?
She skips it.
She skips town, and she moves. And she may move 2 feet. She may move 10 feet. But if we have the bifenthrin there and we start really annihilating the movement of that mound and we start taking away all the worker ants, the queen cannot survive.
I hadn't thought about it that way because when Amdro came out, I was in Florida, and that was God's gift to the world.
Yes, and Amdro was a great product in its day. It is still a great product, in my opinion. And Amdro, a lot of people don't realize it, Amdro also has a label where you can spread it, broadcast it over your entire yard. The problem of that is it's a light material, and you only spread about a pound per 1,000 square feet. It's kind of hard to spread a pound, or maybe it's even less than a pound on Amdro. Maybe, I mean, it's very low, but the spread rate is so low, it's almost humanly impossible to do it. So, the bifenthrin is such an inexpensive product, in my opinion. Was it, Scott? Maybe
$30?
$30, $32.
$1 a pound.
To treat a, you know, 7,000 to 10,000 square foot lawn. It's pretty inexpensive. Spread it out and then go back and mound treat. So, when with this colder weather.
I'm out on acreage, so that's always an issue, too.
Yeah. So, the bifenthrin is a very economical way to do a more broad spectrum. Treatment that's something you can get your hands on and do.
And that's spelled with a B or a D?
Bifenthrin.
Okay, gotcha.
All right.
All righty, we got it.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Katie. Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye. Yes, sir.
You know, Scott, this gives me a good place to interject right before I get to Harriet in Greer. It gives me a great place to interject, too, that these fire ants, let's tie it into our soil temperatures, okay? Mm-hmm. Our soil temperatures, looking at the soil temperature map, upstate of South Carolina, currently this morning we're at 43 soil temperature. We're like cooler air temperature. Our 24 average is 51.5. Our five-day average is 56.8. So we're staying steady in the mid-50s. That's where we were last week for our five-day average. But what you're going to see with these fire ants as that soil temperature continues to decline, they're going to go a little bit deeper. And they're not going to forage. They, in essence, are going to senesce. They're going to get kind of lazy, you know, and they're not going to forage as much. And the bifenthrin, I think, in this situation may be a little more effective than the Amdro. Because the baits, like Amdro, we have to have the ants foraging, looking for food. One way to tell if ants are foraging is to take something like potato chips or Cheetos, something with a lot of oil, because guess what? Ants like junk food, too. And if we crumple those up on a nice sunny afternoon later today, put those on the mound, if we see that covered up with ants within a half an hour and they're all over it trying to feed on it, we know they're foraging and they will actively take up a bait and you'll get better control.
True.
So keep that in mind as well. So when you're trying to control these fire ants, we need them, especially with baits like Amdro, we need the fire ants actively foraging in order for it to be effective. So the bifenthrin Amdro combination, that two-step deal seems to work great. Scott, we're going to go to the phone lines. We have Harriet, who found us at 1-800-347-1063. Good morning, Harriet, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
So I called originally to ask you a question about my fescue, but now that we're on fire ants, you brought up another question.
No problem.
If I treat the whole yard with bifenthrin, does that necessarily slow down the creation of new mounds as they move, or will I still see mounds, pop up they normally do?
You know, unfortunately with fire ants, even in the upstate, you know, I think back to when I was a kid, you really didn't see fire ant mounds. Now, some kids today think that was, you know, eons ago, that I was born in like the 18th century. But it wasn't that many years ago here that we didn't really have that many fire ants in our heavy soil up in the red clay. And a lot of folks thought, well, it's the clay and they're not going to really migrate that far. And now, you know, dadgum, they've become a pretty big issue. The bifenthrin, when you do this two-step, you're still going to have some mounds, I feel like, no matter what you do. I think the only way you can really 100% eradicate them out of your property, and unfortunately it's now a licensed product, is a product called fipronil was the active ingredient. Over and Out, if you remember that years ago. Now, they still have that trade name, but it's not the same Over and Out they had 10 years ago. Because I guess it's, what, 6-7 years ago that fipronil went to a restricted use only, meaning that the active ingredient in Over and Out had to change if they wanted to continue to sell it. It's also, today, it's still sold and always has been, the professional side of it is called Top Choice, but it's a restricted use product, and you will have to contact someone who is licensed to apply Top Choice.
And that'll get you close to a one-year control.
Yeah, that is it's one of those things that's backed by Bayer. It's a one-year guarantee. If you put it out the proper rate, they'll stand behind it that you will not have fire ants for a year. That product works great. Unfortunately, it is very detrimental to aquaculture, to fish, and a lot of this product from the retail, the homeowner side of things, was winding up in waterways. No major fish kills, but, you know, little kills in aquatic creatures were being killed in small streams and neighborhoods, and the government stepped in and said, hey, you know what, we probably don't need this in the hands of homeowners because of the misuse. So they wanted it in the hands of professionals that knew or trained and how to use it appropriately.
I haven't had a fire ant man in my yard in 12 years.
Yeah. I think the key for
stay on top of it.
I think Scott just hit the nail on the head here. The key is staying on top of it. You know, in the spring of the year, broadcast bifenthrin.
I do it 3 times, you know, once every 3 months.
Yeah. During the season.
During the season. From spring all the way to the end of fall.
Got it. Okay. So switching gears, I have fescue. And I would say about 10 years ago when I moved into my house, I took a small tree that was right in the middle of my front yard. I took it out. And ever since then, when I reseed, when I seed, grass will come up in that little area, but then it just eventually fades out. And I just can't constantly keep fescue in that one little spot.
What kind of tree was it? Do you remember?
I do not know. I just know I didn't like the location, and that was the first thing I did.
Was it a big tree?
No, it wasn't really. No, it was probably 4 inches in diameter, about 6 feet tall. Not even, maybe 5 or 6.
And you got the root?
Maybe 5 feet tall.
Okay, and you got the root out and all that?
The root. Yeah, so I thought,
I would do a soil test in that area right there, specifically in that area, and then do another one in a separate part of your lawn, and then drop that off to our store.
Yeah, and let's compare that. But I think, too, we need to look at the soil profile.
Mm-hmm.
Because, this tree, did they come in and grind the stump out?
No, it wasn't that big of a tree. I mean, it was still really young.
Okay. I think you probably, even though the tree's gone now, you're probably still looking at compacted soils. It's probably partly a nutrient deficiency. It's also, I would imagine, partly a soil structure issue where that fescue is just not establishing as well. Now, you said you tried to seed this area, correct?
Yeah. You know, when I overseed each year, that little area, and it's not big, it's maybe, you know, a 2-foot circle, really. And I've tried mixing in some other soil with my soil and just really heavily seeding that area. And I'll put a little wheat straw lightly over it just to keep it from washing. And it'll come up and it'll look great, but then it just fades out.
Yeah. I think Scott's right. I think we need to take and look at nutrients, but I think also we probably need to dig down and look at the profile, maybe 6 or 8 inches deep.
Go out there this morning with a long screwdriver, stick it in your rest of your lawn that's really healthy, see how far you can go down, and then where that tree is, there that you're having a problem with the fescue, stick that in there and see how far you probably can't go down as far as you can the rest of your lawn.
It's probably a soil compaction issue.
Okay.
And then that area right there, just next fall, just get a tiller and go down 4 or 5 inches. 6 inches would be great. Okay. Loosen that up really good, and then come back and seed.
Okay. All right. I will do that then. That's a great idea. I didn't even think about doing 2 different soil tests.
Yeah, most definitely. Drop it off at the Dunkin' store right there.
Okay. All right. I will do.
Okay.
Thank you, Harriet.
Thank you, guys.
Have a good weekend.
Go Tigers.
Bye-bye. Everybody's trying to trap me into that, aren't they? Yeah.
Remember, she did that last week. I know. On the text line, too.
I know. Trying to trap me into that. Trying to make me play
favorites. Pull for your school.
Those who know me personally know my favorites, but sometimes I try to keep that off the air.
I'm a state guy, but that's fine. I pull for them all.
Yeah. I pull for my alma mater.
Yeah, you should.
I know. I should. So proud to be a Tiger alum.
There you go.
How about that?
Nothing wrong with that.
Folks, you are tuned into the Yard Pro Show brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. We are at the bottom of the hour, if you can believe it, Scott. Can you believe it?
It went by fast.
Yeah, it did, didn't it? So we got to take that bottom of the hour break. In the meantime, give us a call at 1-800-347-1063, or you can text us at 71307. Scott, the text line has got a lot of great questions. So when we come back, we'll get straight to the text line. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Yard Pros, folks, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. It's a delight to have you tune in this morning. It is November the 9th. Man, that just feels weird coming out of my mouth, Scott.
November the 9th.
This year is quickly wrapping up, folks. You are tuned into the Yard Pros Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. It's very easy to find us during the week. You can visit us at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. There you will find a link to all 7 retail store locations in the great state of South Carolina. Hours of operation, which is Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturdays, 8 to noon. You will find a lot of information about all the products we sell. First half we talked or told you about all the sod. But one thing that we have really tried to bolster and have I feel like we've done a great job at it, Scott, is increasing the amount of hardscape material and other landscape products that you would use within the landscape. So that's a common thread with all the stores is the hardscape material, the mulches, the things of that nature. And now that the leaves are finally really beginning to drop, we can start cleaning those up. And before Thanksgiving, it's a great time to get your yard mulched.
True.
Right? Yep. So, Scott, you got what, 2 dump trucks?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'd love to see Scott's 2 dump trucks and Anderson and the dump trucks throughout all of our retail locations. We'd love to see them just fully booked between now and
Thanksgiving. I love watching it roll out of the store.
Yeah. So mulches, man, we've got a multitude of choices on that too. And when we're talking mulches, you know, normally we think conventional double ground hardwoods, things of that nature. But don't forget about the pine straw as a source for pine straw. We have great long needle, I think, in every location now. Great pine straw products out there. Anything mulch-wise, maybe you are doing a path and need some pea gravel. Yeah, that can be considered a mulch as well. Slate chips. But we'd love to see those dump trucks. I challenge our listeners to see if they can fill up every dump truck delivery between now and Thanksgiving.
I like that challenge.
You like that challenge? Yeah, Scott likes that challenge. So, you know, it's products like that. It's the lawn and garden products. Maybe it's chemicals, maybe it's fertility, things like that that you need to maintain your lawn as well. So, Scott, real quickly, we've got Joe. We're going to get right to you in Columbia, which is great to hear from someone in the Midlands. So we'd love to hear from more of you, 1-800-347-1063. But I would also... if I can get through here, because some people think this is the ESPN text line or the sports text line.
So we can talk sports. I'll see that.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I wanted to get to, because we've got a fair amount of these to go to. Is it okay to fertilize a rye over Bermuda grass right now? So overseed the Bermuda grass.
Yes.
You're fine to go out with a little bit of fertilizer. Don't get too heavy-handed. A little bit of nitrogen can make that rye kind of peak up and look pretty good. You're good to do that. Fertilize trees and shrubs now. Is it okay to use 10-10-10 for them? Yeah, we're getting to the point where you can fertilize your trees and shrubs. 10-10-10 would be okay. The issue I see with 10-10-10, it's not very long-lived. There's, you know, the old 10-10-10, if we're talking about ag grade, it's a good economical – well, I don't even know if you really run the price per pound of nitrogen, how economical is it? If you got it on hand, use it. But I don't think I'd put my money there because there's no slow release. And when we're fertilizing trees and shrubs that grow at a slower rate versus a lawn, we need something that's a little bit slower that's going to hang around and feed for, you know, 3 months. You know, we always recommend the Triple 14 Wood Ace product produced by Lebanon Fertilizers because of the content of two things. Number one, the slow-release nitrogen source is really good in that product, and it will last for a good 3 months to give you that nice, prolonged, long feeding. Secondly, we like it because it has a micro-element package, the copper, the boron, the magnesium, the manganese, the zinc. Those micro-elements are in there, which we don't always think of when we fertilize. But
which are very beneficial.
A lot of our trees and shrubs can really benefit from a little bit of this micro-element. The reason we call them micros, you don't need much.
Just like us.
Yeah, just like us taking a multivitamin, right? So, yes, you can fertilize trees and shrubs now. What is the best way to fertilize a large, mature oak tree? Should it be done now? We talked about that, or wait to spring. Do it now, but do it again in the spring, Bill. Thank you for the text.
And they go around from the drip line?
Around the drip line is where you got the active roots. If it's in the grass, if you try to put enough fertilizer on top of the grass to fertilize the tree because it's large oak, you're going to burn some of the grass. So the best thing to do is to take one of these little augers or something, bore a hole about 8 inches deep in the ground, maybe 10 inches deep with an electric drill and a little auger bit, and fill it full of fertilizer and just keep working around the drip line about every 2 or 3 feet in that diameter. Is that a good idea, Scott?
That's a great idea.
You like that?
I do.
Yeah, I figured you'd like that. And then when water hits it, the fertilizer is going to move around. So, Scott, we're going to go to Joe. I promise you, folks, we'll get to the other text here in just a minute. I say we go to Joe real quick in Columbia. Hello, Joe, and welcome to the R-Pro Show.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Fantastic. How about yourself?
Good. I've got a question for you, but you neglected to mention when you were talking about your selection of grasses that you've got an incredible little showroom of grasses down on your Clemson Road location, you, so you can check out all of those.
You're right, Joe.
Yeah.
See, Joe, and, you know, hey, I tell you what. You tell Susie the next time you go in there, she owes you a cup of coffee and a donut one morning, or Marshall. Because that's great advertising, and I appreciate you bringing that up, Joe. But you're right. The Columbia location, all the locations have plots of sod where you can go out and kick your shoes off and walk. I always say walk in that yard. If you're looking at choosing that dream lawn, kick your shoes off and walk in it barefoot and see how it feels. And if you do that, I can almost guarantee you're going to buy zoysia every time. Right, Joe?
I totally agree. Unfortunately, I have centipede, but it's too late for me. A quick question. I have knockout roses, overgrown. They're just, the stumps are huge, and they're getting pretty leggy. if you will. And I don't know if they're, if I should just cut them all the way back. And they're about five feet high. I trim them, like you told me to, every February around Valentine's Day. And but I bring them down to a good level. But the stumps have gotten huge now.
Yeah. You know, and that's a problem with all landscape plants. You know, how many years have you had them, Joe? Probably, what, 10, 12, 15 years?
They've got to be a solid 10 to 12 years, yeah.
And unfortunately, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but unfortunately, landscape is a lot how can I say this and not sound terribly materialistic in our world today, but you know, we all get hyped up about we're going to trade our car in because we want the newer model. We're going to update our kitchen because it's getting a little bit old, right? We all renovate a lot of things that are around us in our life, but we don't always think about renovating our landscape. It seems to be the one thing that whether we're building a new house and the homeowner, the contractor, when you start stealing funds to, you know, you got to find funds somewhere to do this upgrade and that upgrade in the house. It always come out of the landscape budget because that's the last thing we do. It's the same thing in our life. I feel like once we're in that home or we're maintaining that landscape, the last thing we think about is renovating the landscape. You're getting to a point with a knockout rose that's, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old. I think they're probably beginning to reach towards the end of their life anyway. You know, do you think about removing them? Now, what I will say, as far as the trunk getting so large, we can't do much about that. It's going to continue to grow every year. But what you could do is be a little more aggressive on your pruning if you would like to be on those knockout roses. And maybe you want to be a little bit more aggressive so you can get them back down to a more manageable height. The one thing that concerns me about pruning the knockout roses, and Scott and I were talking about it during the break, is now that we're beginning to get some hard freezes, and once we get a couple of these behind us, I think it's a good time. You could go ahead if you want to go a little bit earlier this year instead of waiting to February. Once we get a few more hard freezes, go ahead and prune those knockout roses if you'd like. Now, they're going to look a little naked, a little barren going through winter, but, you know, hey, they're a little overgrown anyway. Get a little more aggressive with those and make sure you clean those pruners and make sure we're, you know, we've had a couple freezes or we're in the dead of winter, so we don't run the risk of making Rose Rosetta, or if you've got it inoculated in one plant, we don't transfer it to another. We need to clean our pruners between every plant we're pruning.
Good point.
Not necessarily every cut. I don't think we have to go quite that direction, but if we're pruning plant one, when we get done with it, let's prune it all first, then let's sanitize our pruners, and then go the plant two. Does that make sense?
What would you recommend, being in the Midlands, what would you recommend to take the place? They're really not the prettiest thing. A couple of times a year, they're beautiful, obviously. But
yeah.
What would you recommend for a good showing hedge in front of the whole, you know, farmer's front porch with the lattice work behind it? What would look good there and be presentable all year?
Gardenias.
Yeah, you could do gardenias.
I'm old Southern school.
He's an old. You see, you can tell Scott he's an old soul Southern garden guy, right? Gardenias. I tell you the other things too. They're out there. Abelias. So you're out in the full sun
all day.
Yeah, something like abelia would work good.
Beautyberry.
It just depends on the height. Without seeing it, I tell you what you could. Joe, you go out to the Columbia store. It sounds like a fair amount, right?
Yep.
Are you familiar with them?
All the time.
Go see Susie.
Susie, because she is the plant lady, as we call her. She does a great job with that. And you could take some pictures in there, but I will promise you this, too. We're getting into winter. It's a little bit slower in all the retail locations. Well, it was until I encouraged or put a challenge out there for all of you listeners to fill up all the dump trucks as you can between now and Thanksgiving. So, but things are beginning to slow down, not only in the landscape, but even us in business, we'll slow down a little bit. If you go out there real nice-like and talk with Susie, I can almost guarantee you Susie will make a home visit and take a look at that and give you some suggestions. No doubt about it.
That'll be wonderful. And by the way, she did talk me into a anniversary present for my wife, and I got a couple of coral bark maples.
Yes.
And those are
beautiful.
Simply the talk of the town. Everybody goes crazy when they see him on my lot here.
Beautiful in the fall, especially in the winter with the bark.
So
it is a beautiful, beautiful tree. What she I'll tell you what, she is something special. She's great.
It's one of the trees that when the leaves drop, the plant still looks great.
So
well, thank you so much. Your staff, Marshall and Susie, they have been so much help to me. I'm a northerner, I hate to admit it, but I'm a total loser when it comes to southern of green thumbs. I'm just can't do it.
Yeah, welcome to the South.
It's so different here.
Yes, it is different. That is for sure, Joe.
So I've been relying on Marshall and Susie since I moved here.
Great
deal. You opened, actually.
Well, perfect. So, Joe, well, have a great weekend gardening, and go visit Susie, and she'll help you out with those plants.
Will do. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Scott, you know, a great phone call from down in Columbia. Always great to hear from the folks in the Midlands. 1-800-347-1063 if you'd like to give us a call. Real quick, we got a few folks on hold, Scott, but I wanted to get to this text left over, several of them from the first half of the show. I live in Inman, and in May I planted 14 Thugo Green Giants. They are doing well. Especially during the dry summer. They are on drip irrigation at 2 gallons per tree per day. I've got two questions. One, are they getting too much water? Two, can I start scaling it back? Also, do you have any fertilizer tips? We talked about the fertilizer. You know, all plants and shrubs and trees right now fertilize them, and again in the spring. As far as the watering on those, yeah, I would almost just cut it off at this point. Yep. And next year, unless the plant shows a lot of drought stress, don't worry about watering them. I know you put drip in there. That's great. You got it if you need it
it's
in the future during stress. But, yeah, those are this is a tough plant. I would cut that back. Small backyard in my condo was covered in ivy. Had ivy removed, but need to eliminate the roots. Crossbow has been recommended. What is your suggestion besides something illegal to blow it up? Well, we don't want to do that. But as far as the you really need to get a little bit of that ivy to flush back out, okay? Then you can spray it with something like Crossbow or a brush killer with triclopyr, chlorpyrrolid, that combination, a little bit of 2,4-D, and that will go down through the leaf. Now, some of those ingredients have a little bit of root activity, but we also need to say be careful because the trees and other plants, desirables that are around that area, they will uptake that chemical as well, okay? So be careful. I would let it flush out and then spray the foliage on a nice warm day and let it translocate through the foliage.
Yeah.
That way we can use less. Does that make sense?
Yep.
All right. Scott, we're going back to the phone lines because it has lit up like a Christmas tree. You know, the first Sunday of Advent's not till December the 1st, but you would think today was, you know, kind of Christmas season in here. We have Ron and Greer. Hello, Ron, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hey, good morning. I've got some of the wild Bermuda in a certain section of the backyard has grown pretty well. And I have the Cavalier where I put it strategically at a part where it's doing great considering the various shade versus full sun. Everything's doing really good. My question is, my guess is, particularly when I cut some old red tips down, there's going to be more sun where that wild Bermuda is probably going to be able to take over where I got some just junk. Now, the question is, I've got a line there between where the Cavalier is. Am I going to run a risk of having those tubers from that Bermuda coming up into that Cavalier? Or what is there anything I can do somehow to, you know, strategically landscape it so I don't have that problem?
I don't know about how you're going to landscape it. It's going to split up your yard unless you just want to do that. But, yeah, the Bermuda is going to be a risk. I mean, if you want to keep it all Cavalier Zoysia, my thoughts would be is in the spring of the year, once that Bermuda starts growing and greening up again, I would spray it out two, if not three, applications of Roundup on a two-week interval and then go in there and sod it with Zoysia and be done with it. That way it all stays the same. You got a continuous lawn of grass. Because, yes, the common Bermuda is going to creep into and grow into the Cavalier, and it is a little bit more aggressive. I don't know if it's ever going to completely shade out the Cavalier. It's not that, but you're going to have – they're going to cohabitate together, and you're going to have a mixed lawn, no doubt about it.
But what
– okay.
Just cut your Zoysia lower.
Excuse me?
Just cut your Zoysia, you know, 1 inch, because that common Bermuda wants to be cut 3 inches tall.
Yeah. But it's still going to be there.
It's still going to be there.
Yep. So the best thing you could do, in my opinion, if you want to keep it all one variety, I think I would just eliminate and eradicate the common Bermuda, buy a little bit of Cavalier Zoysia sod in the spring and sod it and be done with it, would be my thoughts.
I'll have to figure it out. Give me some stuff to think about.
All right.
I do things on a crazy wild way, and you guys help me get through my day. So I appreciate you very much. Have a good one.
You too, Ron. Bye-bye. Scott, we're going to stay with the phone line so we can try to get to the text before the end of the show. Hopefully we can. If not, those who have texted us, I will respond to you on your text and try to type back to you at the end of the show. We're going to take Kevin in Simpsonville. Hello, Kevin, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Fantastic. Awesome.
So I've got a question. I've got a front yard with fescue, and I had some patches that didn't take the first time around when I overseeded. So I put some extra seed down that's starting to come up. But how long do I need to wait before I put down 2505 Mesa?
On what kind of grass?
Fescue.
Fescue?
Fescue.
I sling it, man.
Yeah, do it now.
You know?
Oh, cool.
Go ahead. And the reason I say that is, you know, with these fertilizers, especially the Lebanon products, Kevin, it's kind of hard to over-fertilize and burn grass unless – we're just completely stupid with our rates and we're fertilizing when there's a lot of dew or moisture on the grass blade. These products have a lot of really good slow-release methylene urea that's not a real high burn potential with any of them. And with the soil temperatures cooling off every day now, I would rather get that 2505 out there, get that nitrogen out there now so that we can get a little bit more greening and growing from that before we get further into the season where the soil temperatures drop into the 40s. So I'd go ahead and do it now.
Okay. And since you were talking about Bermuda, I actually have a small patch of Bermuda in that fescue that for years I've tried to kill it back with Roundup, several treatments. I think one year I even three or four treatments. Were you saying Cavalier, do you think that's a better product to get rid of Bermuda?
Well, Cavalier is actually a variety of sod. It's a Zoysia variety.
So
what Ron was referencing, he has some Cavalier in the yard. And he was talking about the Comber Bermuda, you know, is it going to grow into the Cavalier? Yeah, Comber Bermuda will grow through asphalt. I mean, this stuff is just tough as nails. And that's
why
I say.
I've given up.
Now, I will tell you, Kevin, I've got one area in my yard, same thing. It's two, actually one area. It's really just down to one area now of Comber Bermuda. And I got the same problem you have, man. I'll spray it multiple times, 2 week intervals in August, start on it, and then seed it in mid September. And I'll get it 2 or 3 years where it's at bay. It's never fully eradicated, but it's at bay where I'm happy. But about every 2 or 3 years, I have to go spray that area again and go through that process. I think if you just realize and understand that's the expectation, you'll be okay. And, you know, every 2 or 3 years, yes, you're going to have to go in and spray that area, you know, 4 to 6 weeks prior to overseeding. Bermuda's just tough to get rid of. It really is.
Well, that makes me feel a lot better because that's exactly what I've been doing. I just said, oh, I'm never going to get rid of it. I'm just going to have to kill it off in August and then just seed that whole area heavy.
You do that, and then I will promise you 3 years later you're going to have some common right back in that same area. It's just, unfortunately, it's a fact of life of where we live. I hate to tell you the truth, but I'll tell you the truth. How about that?
May I ask one more question?
Sure.
So I've got Tifway 419 in the backyard. It's done really well. I've got some weed. It looks like different varieties of sedge that have maybe come up towards the end of summer that now going into winter, I put down the 007 already on it probably a month ago. Do I need to do anything with those weeds or just let them die and then deal with it next year?
I'd say almost just worry about it next year through pre-emergent and try to use your pre-emergent schedule to keep them at bay. That's what I would do.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, bye-bye. Scott, we're going to go to Randy. We only have about 2 minutes left, and before I pull Randy on the air, he'll have about a minute and a half. I do want to say for all of those who texted, I will spend a little bit of time at the end of the show here and make sure that I reply to your text. So be looking on your phones. You should get a reply from me. Let's go to Randy. Hello, Randy, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hello, sir. Thank you all for what you do. And I want to put out some gardenias. And I was wondering, like in the upstate here, South Carolina, what is a good, strong, proliferant variety of gardenia?
Scott, you're the plant guy.
Yeah. Frost-proof.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one. That's a newer
double
one.
Double mint is a newer one. I like that one, too. Yep, yep.
I don't think you can really go wrong with the actual variety for where we are in the transition zone, Randy. I think what you've got to do, a lot of these varieties are – they were bred for one growth, you know, like we got the miniatures, we've got kind of intermediate growth, we got the old-fashioned big ones with the big leaves that grow taller. I think the best thing you can do is just kind of fit the variety with the space that you're trying to grow it in, if that makes sense.
Okay. It's a small space in front of the house, and I have some August beauties on the other side, but they're kind of sparse.
Well, and how much sun are they getting into? One thing with gardenias, if they're in full blazing southern exposure, summer sun, sometimes they can look a little, they get a little beat down with the sun, I guess you'd say.
Half and half would be the best.
Yeah.
So about 90% sun, actually.
Yeah. If you can find an area that it's maybe sunnier in the morning up to about 3 in the afternoon and maybe catch a little shade late in the day, you may find that you have a little more success with them.
Okay.
All right.
So frostproof and what was the other? Double mint.
All right.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Randy. Have a great weekend.
Yes,
folks, you have been tuned into the Yard Pro Show brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I want to take the last 20 seconds, and I want to say something sincerely from the bottom of my heart. Monday is Veterans Day. Happy Veterans Day, and thank you to all the veterans out there. We really appreciate what you have done to protect our freedom and our liberties. So thank you for that. You've been tuned into the Yard Pro Show. We'll talk to you next week.